I'm in the program when anyone can come up and speak on any issue that they wish to speak on. It's open forum. You can speak on any issue you would like to bring before the commission at this time. And I have three. And the first one is Russ Roberts.
Russ Roberts, St. Ann, South Dakota again. I just had something I wanted to run by you guys about the laws concerning transportation of turkeys in South Dakota. It is very, very difficult for hunters that are traveling across the state or from another state to haul an entire bird carcass around. And it would be a lot easier if you could take edible portions of that bird, and so everything is there. Mike Applin's our local CO in our area, and I have not visited with him about this, but I'm very confident that he would think that his COs are competent enough to understand the sex of a bird as long as the required parts are there. And even if you have to have a beard or a tail fan or spurs or whatever for proof of that bird, if you could disassemble the edible portions of that bird, it would make traveling hunters much more easily able to take care of that bird properly and use the meat as it's supposed to be used without having an entire carcass. And I understand there's going to be some rule and regulation change required to make that happen, but I would really like you folks to look into doing that just to make it easier on hunters. And it's very simple process to identify the sex and how many birds are involved in that, just looking at the parts. Thank you much for your time.
Thank you, Russ. Don?
You can say it however you want. Isley, but that's not spelled that way.
Don, I apologize. I knew your name was Don Heisley, but it's not spelled that way.
You're exactly right. I'd like to thank the commissioners and Secretary Hepler for this opportunity. I can't cover this subject in 3 minutes. I've got pictures here I'm not even going to pass out of our place, the elk droppings, the elk damage, and so on. Our place happens to be right across the road from Mr. Ranapaw's place. They've been in our families for 100 years or better. We've been able to keep subdivision out because we're running an ag operation. I run some cattle. But the loss of forage on this is unbelievable. In a wet year, the last good year we had, probably with this much moisture, I think we got 59 large bales off our place. This year we took zero, because the neighbors who put up the hay looked at it and said, it's not worth putting up. The upper end of our place is like this. The cows weren't in there after June 8th. There's no regrowth on our upper meadows. It's full of elk droppings all the way down to our house. And they took, which lays farther down, we're on the North Fork of Box Elder Creek. Kurt got a lot more hay across the road from us than we got. A lot more. So I'm going to quantify this again. I did this for you when you talked about your 1,000-acre, the proposal on 1,000 acres for a landowner tag. I think the landowner tag ought to be tied to use. But if you would allow me just a minute to go through the numbers here. So I've got two archery hunters that I gave permission to earlier before archery season was over. They said they saw about 70 head of elk in there, and they're in there a lot. And there's more substantiation. I've seen them on our place all summer. But if you take 40 head of elk, and I'm just taking this average weight at 600, I don't know if that's right, but that over everything, and they eat 3% of their body weight a day, that's a lot of forage. So I calculated this out. to be about over 6 months time frame. They're in and out of there 6 months. That's 43 ton of forage. I can't afford to replace this kind of forage in my ag operation because it costs a hay. So if you quantify that to dollars at $120 a ton delivered, we bought some a little more than that, we bought some a little less. That's $5,000 loss of forage because these elk are on every acre of our property. They're not only taking in the good hay ground, they're taking in the woodland pastures as well. Conservation officer's been up there twice this year. We're working with him. He's doing what he can. But on your forage replacement program, it's less than $800 this year. I'm sorry, but the trade-offs aren't there. So something needs to be done. We may be a little bit unique in the situation we're in where the elk are all around us. We got Forest Service on three sides. But anyway, something needs to be done because I'm not giving this fight up. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Don. Next speaker is Kenneth Hargens.
Thank you all for letting me come here and speak today. My name is Kenneth Hargens. I'm from Custer, South Dakota. Sure. If you look at the things in that folder I've distributed, you'll see why I'm here today. And why I'm here is that I own property in Custer State Park. My family's had the property since 1892, and so we, my family consider ourselves to be a little different than the people that have the summer homes down there because we've had the property for so long. Anyway, I'm a historian, and last summer I erected a sign in my front yard down there. It's behind a fence indicating that it's a the first schoolhouse in Custer County. 1877, you'll see there's a picture of the sign in there. And Mr. Snyder, can you come up here, please? Okay, all right.
Oops. Talk.
Okay, anyway, Matt Snyder sent me a letter here a couple weeks ago about, he reflected that the sign was not, it was illegal. And he questioned the veracity of the wording on the sign. And what I have here is documentation that we have, in fact, owned that property since 1892. My grandfather was a doctor. He came out here. And as soon as he came to Hot Springs, he was introduced into a wildlife group. And so he came to the place down there. Fred Evans owned it, actually. He was a freighter from Fort Pierre to Deadwood. Anyway, he came to that property, and he used it as a hunting and fishing lodge up until he passed away in 1958. He's almost 100 years old. Anyway, if you look at that stuff, you'll see that there's documentation in there from, there's some photographs in there. I think the oldest one is 1915. And there's a letter from my older sister down in Shadron, 91 years old, stating that Grandpa used that. And also a letter from my sister in 1950. There was two sisters approached us. They're both in their 90s, and they used to actually teach school there back in the 1880s. Further documentation is those photographs. You might notice they're pretty interesting. One of them deals with the Warren Lamb Lumber Company, which used to go right past our property, and that was in 1917. Also, there's a note in there that a lady told me that her grandfather went to school there back in the 1880s. Anyway, what I'm asking the commission to do is to provide some guidance to Mr. Snyder that we can keep our sign there. The sign is behind a fence. It's behind a fence to protect it from the buffalo. And the family feels that we should be able to keep that sign up there. I'm down there all the time. Passers-by come by. They want to know what the log structure is. I'm down there cutting lawn, filling potholes, killing thistles, fixing fence, stuff like that. So I put the sign up as not only to recognize our family, but also to promote the fact that it's a historical area, and the park should recognize that as a historical area.
Mr. Hargens?
Yes.
Since our time is up, could you give the commission some time to look at this?
Yes, exactly.
And discuss it?
Right.
And we'll look through, it's going to take us quite a little time to go through this, look at the documentation.
Sure.
And one of us will get back to you.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else want to speak in an open forum? Seeing none, Mr. Chairman, I believe that completes the open forum.
Good. Well, let's take a break till 3:20. But let me say this. It's great to have so many people here.